A forensic audit of the Blue Hills Civic Association uncovered $208,000 in unsupported disbursements and widespread financial mismanagement of more than $15 million in state grant funds. It was a 64-page audit that was just released by the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development. It found, quote, pervasive governance failures, system internal control weaknesses, and patterns of conduct that strongly suggest potential fraud and misappropriation of public funds, end quote. Now, this audit was not done clearly by the comptroller's office. However, I do know that Comptroller Sean Scanlon is a huge supporter of transparency and fiscal responsibility, and he joins us back on the show now. Comptroller Scanlon, welcome back. What was your reaction to this latest forensic audit?
Alarmed. I think anytime you read a report, whether it's done by my office or a third party, as was the case here, and you learn of abuses of the system, it pisses you off, right? And it makes you frustrated. And, you know, like everyone else who read that, I was concerned that this could have happened. But the great part about being the comptroller is that I get to go to work and try to solve problems. And I have been talking with the governor a lot about how we can solve this problem. And I think you're going to see some really strong action come as a result of this. And I think that that's a good thing for the people of Connecticut.
So this is, for people who are not familiar with the Blue Hills Civic Association, it's a Hartford-based nonprofit. According to reports, it received $11 million in legislative grants in the fiscal years of 2024 and 25, plus additional federal and state funding totaling more than $15 million over multiple years. So in this situation, Comptroller, it's not like we can recoup the funds, right? I mean, what effectively could, you know, people like you or the governor, like, what could be done when the fraud has already happened? The misappropriations already happened.
Well, like everything, I think that there is a serious criminal investigation that's happening right now involving some of the people that were mentioned in that report. And I think you will see potential criminal action as a result of that report and the underlying situation. So there is always that, right? Justice can be served that way. But I think the bigger thing is, you know, I don't know if we can get that money back. I think that that's why it's a criminal investigation and not something we can recoup the money. I do think, though, from my perspective, it's always what can we learn from these situations and from bad actors doing bad things, and how can we strengthen the checks and balances? That's what I've dedicated the last couple of years to doing, whether it's on the CCSU system or the cannabis money. I mean, the governor has asked me a number of times to sort of dive into these issues and say, hey, some people have done something. Now let's prevent this from ever happening again. And that's what we're doing here. And that's what I think we will do. And I think there are some fixes that are easily identified from this situation that will prevent this from happening in the future.
So again, we've got Comptroller Sean Scanlon here, and I just want to reiterate that it was not his office who conducted this audit. However, you did kind of mention something there, Comptroller, which is that you have done pretty high profile audits in the past. The CSU audit from late 2024, we're still kind of seeing the effects even today. I actually was talking about this with my listeners recently, that we finally saw a letter back in early January in regards to just what's happening ever since your audit came out. And it does sound like the Board of Regents, they're doing a lot with leadership transition, system stabilizing, improving operating climate under when you have interim leadership, which is what they're under right now, their search processes. So it looks like they want to go back and see, you know, first of all, are we kind of adopting bad habits, one leader to the next leader to the next leader, which is something that was highlighted in your report. It wasn't just the former chancellor. This was something that kind of was a systematic issue that had been going on for a very long time. So it looks like they are trying to address it still. My question, though, is I'm still kind of surprised that the former chancellor is still making six figures and is still part of the CSCU group. He's still an important, it sounds like, prominent figure, actually, in kind of fixing some of these issues, ironically enough. And I didn't know your thoughts on it.
Well, look, he has a contract, and that contract is a contract, right? And the world is bound by contracts, even though sometimes those contracts are frustrating to those of us on the outside looking in, right? But the bigger story here is that they are making real progress. And Chairman Maduko, who is the interim chair that succeeded Chancellor Chang, has been in my office repeatedly. He is committed to this. They took steps proactively to take the recommendations of our report and put them into place. We then put those recommendations, many of them, into state law in the last session so that if the next guy had a change of heart and decided to go back to the bad ways, that they wouldn't be able to do that. So I think the taxpayer should know that this wasn't just a report that collected dust and nothing happened. It's going to be the same old, same old. No, these are now in state law. There is a guy who has the job right now who's seriously committed to righting the wrongs of the past. And I think that they're making real progress. Is it frustrating that the former chancellor has that contract? Yes, it is. But I'm focused on, as I think a lot of people should be, that we're making real progress and that that result of that investigation was big change that's happened at CSU.
And I do remember, Comptroller, you had made, I believe it was 10 recommendations to lawmakers in the last legislative session. Did that pass?
So a lot of them, you know, I don't remember the exact number of them that got codified into state law, but every one of the recommendations was adopted either through a change in the statute or through an action that the university system took.
Okay. And what is that website again, if people want to go and look to see how spending is being made? You have like a website that really allows people
to see that. It's called Open Connecticut, and you can literally go on that portal, and then within that portal, there's a bunch of different kinds of things that all begin with the word open. So there's open budget, open payroll. You can look up how much money, you know, a state trooper makes. You can look up how much we spent on paperclips, right? You can look up anything on that website if you, you know, want to see what your government is doing, and I think that that's important. One of the lessons that comes out of Blue Hills and one of the reforms that I think you're going to see is they weren't reporting any of that to my system because what they were doing was they were taking the money, which has to be reported in the system, and then giving it to what's called secondary payees, meaning they were giving it to subcontractors without the permission of the state. That to me is the number one reform that we can make as a result of Blue Hills, which is to ban that from happening. If you want state money, you have to be accountable for that. You can't give it to anybody else. If that other group wants state money, then they can come and apply for it. But it all has to be done transparently and all on that website. And the way that they were getting around that was they were using subcontractors. They weren't doing it themselves.
We've got Comptroller Sean Scanlon with us, and we were just talking about forensic audit reports. I want to also look at economic reports. There's another thing, Comptroller Scanlon, that if we have time, I'd like to talk about, which is what we could do about healthcare costs. But we'll go to economic reports and what stands out to you. I know there was a report that came out this week looking at Connecticut. I think it was Wallet Hub that had ranked Connecticut pretty low when it comes to attracting businesses. And I just wasn't sure what some of our recent economic reports in Connecticut are reflecting and if it's anything you're worried about.
Well, first of all, I think the good rankings and the bad rankings are all silly. So, you know, every day I'll see something that's like a clickbait headline that's like Connecticut ranks 49th in public bathroom cleanliness at rest stops and Connecticut ranks third in some arbitrary thing. All these things are just to get clicks. I think at the end of the day, what matters most is what's happening with our budget and what's happening with the budgets of people who run businesses and run households in the state. And I think we are making real progress, as I've talked about in your show a lot, about how we've turned around Connecticut's finances. I think the challenge for our state now is to make sure that people who are getting really hurt by this affordability crisis start to share in and feel the state's success. You know, I used to say we have a big rainy day fund and people would say, that's awesome. Congratulations. You've done a good job. Now what they say is, well, it's raining in my house. So when am I going to start to feel that benefit? And I think that that's going to be our central sort of challenge going forward in the next few years. We have turned the state around. We have gotten ourselves in better financial footing. But people are really hurting right now, and that's what we have to focus on.
So we have to also look at, you know, part of that financial hurt that people on average are feeling is with healthcare, certainly. And you and I have talked about this a lot. But, you know, when you look at what happened at the federal level, and the fact is even if there was something that passed the House, it was after the subsidies ran out. And I mean, when you look at, you know, of course, from our listening area, a lot of Fairfield County families were hit hard, especially by their healthcare costs going up substantially. But we know it's not just your health insurance. You know, it is still the amount of money when you go to a hospital. It is still, to some degree, the amount of money you pay for prescriptions. Now, that's something you have tackled a lot, are prescription drugs. And I think you're starting to see that in Connecticut. I think people are starting to see, oh, this is becoming more affordable. And I think we're in a better place with that. But with hospitals and certainly our health insurance, I could honestly tell you we're not in a better place. And so I wasn't sure, especially with health insurance, I wasn't sure if you had any recommendations going into this next session, because quite frankly, Comptroller, and you know this, we've not seen anything substantial pass in a legislative session in years to actually make more affordable options for healthcare coverage for Connecticut residents.
Yeah, the Scanlon three-point plan for healthcare is this, and I'm going to give it to you in the Cliff Notes version for your listeners. Number one, I believe that we should create a public option for health insurance, meaning that small businesses and nonprofits could buy their health insurance from the state employee plan or a version like it that would allow them to piggyback off of what they're already doing with their taxpayer dollars to save some money on health insurance and create a new option that would be run by an insurance company. This is not socialized medicine. This is not scary like they say it is. It's basically just allowing people like your local small business or your local nonprofit to save money on health insurance. But we can't just do that in a vacuum. We actually have to try to control the cost of health insurance. And so the next thing we have to do is get at what you're talking about, which is hospitals. We have some of the best healthcare in the world here in Connecticut. Two very large but very good health systems in Yale and Hartford, but it costs a lot of money to get healthcare there. And the biggest reason driving that is because those hospitals are underpaid for government health insurance, meaning Medicaid and Medicare. Can't really do anything about Medicare because that's coming from the feds, but we can do a lot about Medicaid, which is health insurance for poor people, disabled people, young children. And the state for about 20 years has underfunded the payments to doctors and hospitals for Medicaid. So what I've been working on with the governor is sort of a grand deal that would raise the Medicaid rates. And in exchange for doing that, they would lower the costs on the commercial side, meaning health insurance for you and I in this plan. And if we can do that, we can drop the cost of healthcare. And the final thing is to not just do that once, but to do it in perpetuity. And that goes back to something we have in the state called the healthcare cost growth benchmark. If that sounds like word salad, what it basically is we tell the hospitals, we tell the insurance companies, we tell the drug companies, here is the percentage that you can increase all your stuff this year. You can't go over that. Right now, there's no penalty for going over that, so they go over it every year. But if there was a penalty for going over it, and we were to really try to contain those costs while also doing things like making it easier for them to deliver lower base costs by helping them with the Medicaid side and all that kind of stuff, you can sort of lower these costs in the future and in perpetuity for people. All this is really hard and complicated. I just saw an ad reading an article in the CT Mirror where, you know, special interests are already running ads opposing some of the things I'm talking about because they hate them. But if you really want to get serious about lowering healthcare costs, we have to swing big. And those are three big ideas that can really make a big difference.
Another one that I'm just curious what your thoughts are, Comptroller, is the association health plans, which I know has been put forward. And from my understanding, has actually a lot of support from both Republicans and Democrats and even nonprofit sector. But it never gets voted out of committee or it never goes anywhere. But that's another thing that I, just from a health insurance standpoint, having a father with a brokerage in Connecticut for decades, the association plans also can be a really affordable option for Connecticut residents. But I don't believe it's seen as I don't want to say legal, but appropriate from the Connecticut Insurance Department. But that's another option that I'm surprised we're not utilizing.
It is another option. And there's been a big debate about this you know, the progressives tend to favor the public option. The conservatives tend to favor the association health plan. I've said, I'll meet you guys both in the middle and let's just get something done that models both of these things. The association health plan is good for some people in the sense that it allows more leverage, right? So businesses can pool together. But the challenge with association health plans is that maybe you get a couple dozen employees together or a couple hundred, whereas I have 250,000 on my plan. So I will always have more leverage with a public option, the governor likes to call it a Connecticut option, than you would with an association health plan. And my belief is that the more leverage you have, the more money you save. And I'd like to take a crack at saving the most money possible. If we can't get that done, then yeah, people will continue to come back and look at association health plans. And I've always said, I think we should look at everything and anything because people don't care what we're doing in the Capitol. They care about the premium increase they're seeing every year. And we have to do something.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see if this legislative session, we see something significant as far as healthcare costs are concerned, especially when you look at the federal level that, I really think this past open enrollment was probably the worst I've seen in, well, ever, honestly. So I look forward to seeing what hopefully happens during the legislative session starting in February. And Comptroller Sean Scanlon, I always appreciate you giving us the time here on Melissa in the Morning. Thank you so much. And I know we'll talk again really soon.